Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast.
I mean, you know, given that I wasn't familiar with the song in the past, so it's not something that I have any great sentimental
link. If you phoned up Kat, she could have listened to it for you and then told you what it was about.
But given that it's meant to be about anti-slavery, it does seem like a slightly odd decision. But do you know what? I mean, look, the people in the Rolling Stones are famously hippies. They're obviously social liberals. They're incredibly forward when they formed in the 60s. So I think they're highly conscious of these issues. I think the question is less about songs like Brown Sugar, but you have other ones like Blurred Lines, the one that was supposedly about sort of, you know, sexual consent. And I think there is a question to be asked about whether some of these songs that become incredibly popular actually have a real effect and a damaging effect on people's social attitudes and how they think about others. And I think
So this what was this guy's name?
Benjamin Butterworth.
And he was, of course, speaking to the Rolling Stones about how Brown Sugar, their song, needs to be cancelled. Welcome to the show. Welcome back. DanaLash.com. So, where to start? I know. I said this was going to happen. I'm actually, can I be real? I'm surprised this didn't happen sooner. Really shocked this didn't happen sooner. I was just waiting for it. And then it finally did. So, the Rolling Stones have dropped their hit song, Brown Sugar, from the tour set list. Now, if you listen to Keith Richards, Keith Richards does not sound like he gives one rat's backside about everybody's concern for political correctness. He does not. Whereas Jagger was like, oh man, I don't know what I was on. It has all the nasty bits in it. That's what he says of his song. That's what he said of it. They wrote this song. What is it, 69? I've seen it, everything from 69 to 71. I think there's a difference when they wrote it and then when they actually recorded it. I think they were at Muscle Shoals down in Alabama when they recorded this. Is this the one they did at Muscle Shoals? I think it was. I think this was from that album. So this, I can't believe it's been 50 years. It is like the second most played song. This is the song that when I hear it, I just hear that first chord and I'm like, Rolling Stones. That's it. I just hear it. I have a particular skill set, and that skill set is I can pretty much identify the song in the first bar. Really? Yeah, it's weird, dude.
Like, name that tune?
Yep.
You could do that?
Yep. It's really weird. So, and someone who's totally off key can sing part of it, and I can know it, even if they're totally off key. So, the song Brown Sugar, the lyrics were considered controversial. Now, isn't Brown Sugar also slang for heroin? That's what I thought, wasn't it?
I thought that was like brown stone.
No. Well, I think it's all those things.
Is it brown whatever?
Us, the drug experts. We're so wholesome. Like, Cain knows all the books of the Bible. We're so wholesome. No, but I think it's slang for heroin. So things always kind of have like a double entendre, sort of like how the Beatles pretty much always wrote about drugs, right? I mean, it's kind of, well, I mean, especially with you know, some of their later albums. So the 1969 song that they wrote, they said that it was a song that's condemning slavery. It definitely does not portray it in any kind of a good light. I'll tell you that. And I always thought it wasn't him just being a pervert. I always thought it was him being on drugs. That's what I thought, right? I mean, if you think about Brown Sugar as slang for heroin, then that
Keith Richards did them all.
Yeah, Keith Richards. There's no more heroin. Keith Richards did it all. He did it all so much that it actually is keeping him alive now. He has to do it. But there is something to this, though. This with people are saying, oh, there's, you know, you have to, it has to, they have to be canceled. The song has to be removed. It's super racist. It's super. And so they were saying, well, we don't. Keith Richards was saying, he said that he was talking to the sisters about it. I don't know what that meant. I'm reading like an actual quote from him. And he was trying to talking about how this song was a condemnation of it and portraying the horrors of it over a really groovy, like, you know, rock and roll riff. I'm just saying. So it's one of the most popular songs. But if it depicts the horrors of slavery, then why So they were asked, LA Times had asked them, what, you haven't played this in forever. It was a hit in 71. They wrote it in 69. And Keith Richards was like, oh, you picked up on that, huh? And he goes, this is his quote from LA Times. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out with the sisters quite where the beef is. Didn't they understand this was a song about the horrors of slavery, but they're trying to bury it. So I don't know what that means. It's Keith Richards. He's like from another dimension. I don't know what that means. So obviously there's a lot of non-consensual stuff, etc. But at the same time, this was written in an era where nobody GAF. And everyone just wanted to write. One of the things that the Rolling Stones did, and I will say this, and we don't have that today. I love music. I don't care what era it is, so long as it doesn't suck. And I like a lot more music that's written by the actual artist that's performing it. Because there's just something authentic and something raw about it. And with the Stones, one of the things that they did is they were always able to kind of capture the ethos of that period, right? Like they were really able to do that. Like so this song, if I remember, was this on? Let me double check here. So this album that Brown Sugar was on, because if this was their 71 hit, I think this is Let It Bleed. I think this is on the Let It Bleed album. I'm gonna double check. That album was amazing, pretty unbelievable. No, this was not on that. I'm incorrect. I was like, oh, I don't think it was.
It was the Sticky Fingers.
Sticky Fingers, that's right. So, but they could capture an ethos. Like they were a blues-based rock and roll band. I love the Stones. And they're one of my favorites. I know, I think I have everything. I have all their stuff. After Love Is Strong, I started kind of getting a little lost. But this was like, it had a party fun beat, but it also, I mean, yeah, he said in 95, Jagger said in 95, I couldn't write this song now. Okay, I get that. But where's like any, they were able to write music that really captured like an era. So the Let It Bleed album that they had, that's where they had Gimme Shelter and they had Live With Me, Let It Bleed title track. Midnight Rambler, You Can't Always Get What You Want. That album had a mood. That album was a mood. That was what in, I'm trying to think what year that came out in 69. And that's when they were dealing with all the drugs. And wasn't that right at the concert that they had? That was like right after that Altamont concert. After all the violence that broke out, that was like a day after this album came out, they had that issue. And then you had the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and RFK, and there was all kinds of stuff going on with war, Tet Offensive, and all this. And Gimme Shelter, the first track on that, that's one of my favorite songs because it's so, that's just a moody, dark, gothic kind of real vibe. I don't know. It's just, it's very, it's heavy. And you know, when you hear it, you're like, that's heavy. That's something's going to go off there. Anyway, I could like get into the whole, I am obsessed with the creation of the song and the background vocals and all that stuff. Anyway, long story short, to cancel all this stuff. I mean, it's one thing. I don't, is there anybody who's alive who's like, oh yeah, all these things are thinking that they were singing about, these were good things. No one's saying this. I mean, and they didn't even say this in the song. It's a good song. And it makes me think of Keishi 95 from in my hometown of St. Louis. That was the rock station. They use that in their commercials and everything. I hear that and I think of Keishi and Rolling Stones, right? You hear that song, what do you think of? I think of being in the, you know, either on the river, on Black River in Missouri while everybody's barbecuing and playing the Stones and most of the adults are drunk so you can light off bottle rockets and unused and the empty beer bottles and nobody's going to say nothing to you. We tore it up. But, you know, it's a mood. And now, oh, they can't play it. But Keith Richards seems less resigned to this than Mick Jagger does, which I thought was interesting. They all seem very, like, very sensible now. I don't know. But they haven't played it in a while, a long while. Is it that? I mean, the lyrics are, I guess, I don't know. What do you think, Kane? You're a music guy. You like.
Yeah, I'm down with music. I could, if you just read the lyrics as the lyrics, I guess you can see where people would have issues. You know, it was sexualizing black women, essentially. is what it was doing.
Mm-hmm. From the point of a slave owner.
Yeah, I guess, but he talks in the song.
Well, I mean,
about,
they literally say "scarred old slaver." That's like one of their lyrics.
Knows what,
yeah,
scarred old slaver knows what he's doing.
No, so he's doing all right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're talking about that slaver, not as the slaver, right. But yeah, I don't. I guess you really have to, you know, want to be upset about it.
I don't know. I just really like that guitar riff. Could they change something on it if worse came to worse? Or maybe just, can people just, I don't know, stop? There's nothing about, it would be weird to kind of sing that out loud at a concert with other people. In your car is one thing. You know, it's like Gimme Shelter. You wouldn't sing Rape Murder. You wouldn't sing that like that, like outside, you know, with a bunch of people. That's like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not one thing that you would sing. You wouldn't sing that.
This isn't the number one pick for karaoke night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I could sit here and go, we could have music. Mary Clayton, by the way, she did the BGVs and Forgive Me Shelter. She like had a miscarriage right after she did that. Really? Yeah, that is like a horrible story. And when I hear, because she like showed up in the middle of the night and they asked her as a favor, they're like, oh man, we need somebody. She grew up in a Baptist church in New Orleans. She grew up singing. If you listen to her isolated vocal track, that woman owns everybody who has ever sung after her. That woman could sing rings around. Give me somebody. Give me somebody. I would put all my money on Mary Clayton. Oh, my gosh. The emotion, the control. Amazing. I didn't mean for it to be all about music right now, but I don't know, man. I love the Stones. And the thing I was thinking about when I was compiling the rundown is I was like, every really weird era internationally had its own music stamp. Like when the Berlin Wall fell, I mean, I was a little bitty, but still, I know that, you know, my husband, who's a little older than me, but he was in high school when all that happened. And there's some, whether it's U2 and all these other like new wave music acts from that era, that is like music that you associate mentally with that period. And so there's the soundtrack that's created for it. Same thing with Vietnam War. And I would even argue with Gulf War too. There's something with that. So with any kind of tense period, there's always something, any kind of unrest, there's always some kind of soundtrack. There was a ton of stuff in the 90s with Bush, even with W. But we don't have anything like that now. I think that's one of our problems, honestly. Although if anybody does it, they're going to make it so contrived politically that it's going to be awful.
Look, good music sometimes tells good stories. It doesn't mean that there's some support for the subject matter in the story or anything like that. That's why I think people are getting a little overblown about this whole thing. But I can understand, I guess, where the Rolling Stones would remove it from their set list. But I just think it's a decent story. And that's literally all it is.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, they're talking about the horrors of something that happened in that time. Now we're going to cancel everything. This year, Kel-Tec is celebrating 30 years of game-changing innovation and performance. A privately owned family company that began making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms in 1995. In 1999, Kel-Tec launched their brand on the scene by forever redefining the concealed carry handgun. And from that point on, Kel-Tec continues to innovate and create never-before-seen firearms. Pistols, rifles, and shotguns alike, never copying firearms, always innovating new ones. Kel-Tec believes in respect, family, the right to bear arms, and in the love we all have for our great country. They do things right. All Kel-Tec firearms are proudly made right here in America in a true family culture that embraces every employee and where people are genuinely happy to come to work. The Kel-Tec's commitment to innovation and quality truly sets them apart. Find out more about Kel-Tec firearms by visiting KelTecWeapons.com for a deeper dive on all aspects of their innovative firearms. That's KelTecWeapons.com to learn more about my friends at Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec, game-changing innovation and performance.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
This is my favorite story today. So the UN tells Greta Thunberg, Thunberg or Thunberg? I guess it's Thunberg. They tell her to go pound sand. They told her, just get out. I can't believe the UN did that, but it was an 18-member of the UN panel. They told a little teenage Swedish climate alarmist and exhibitionist Greta Thunberg to go pound sand. They said that they could not rule on a complaint that state inaction on climate change violates children's rights. And they say that the teenage exhibitionist you should have taken it to the national courts first. That's it. So she was mad and she was, they did nothing. Nobody cares. Like, where are your parents? Like, shouldn't you be in school? Isn't it homecoming time? Like, do you have a mom like we have in Texas? Like, what are you doing? Also, Maxine Waters says she tweeted yesterday that her Twitter account was hacked and deleted. So I will say this again. She tweeted from her Twitter account that her Twitter account had been hacked and deleted. Literally, that's what she did. She tweeted it. She tweeted, I have been hacked. This is at 10:55 a.m. yesterday. She tweeted, quote, I've been hacked and my Twitter account has been erased. I know who's done this. I will take care of this. M. Waters. It's totally sus. How is it that she's able to tweet if her Twitter account was hacked and erased? I don't know who. I would love to see her debate Joe Biden. They'd both get lost just standing in the parking lot. Marine Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller is expected to plead guilty to some of those charges against him after he criticized the Marines, some of the leadership following the deadly terror attack in Afghanistan that cost 13 lives of U.S. servicemen, service members, men and women, servicemen. Same thing. I'm not politically correct. Get over it. So Lieutenant Colonel Stu Schiller, he took to Facebook in August after that suicide bombing in Kabul. And he had been in confinement, I guess, at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. So one of his attorneys said that he's going to be pleading guilty in the case, as reported by The Hill. They said it began as a case, as a call for accountability. And that's really what this was. Just true. That's exactly what it was. And I mean, I understand the whole argument about making sure that there's, you know, going to follow the chain of command, et cetera, et cetera. But who watches the watchman? I mean, if he's not held accountable, then who is ultimately? I mean, how do you hold people accountable if they, that's the million-dollar question here. So I'm just, you know. I'll give you some of the wokery headlines that we're going to have. I've heard of people canceling Christmas and I've heard of people canceling Easter at school. I've never heard of anyone canceling Halloween. I've even heard of Valentine's being canceled because people did not get the same number of Valentines. But a Seattle elementary school has canceled Halloween activities over concerns about student equity and inclusion. Specifically, Seattle Public Schools says that black males do not celebrate, and more generally, students of color feel marginalized by the holiday. One parent said that it was an exercise in affluent white vanity that is wokeism. So, yeah, it's Benjamin Franklin Day Elementary, BF Day, in Seattle's Fremont neighborhood. They have a pumpkin parade where students wear costumes, but the administration now says that they're changing their focus to foundational beliefs around equity for students and families. So they are canceling Halloween. And instead, they're going to just do some fall-themed units. That sounds like fun. Fall-themed units. Wokeism is making everything about childhood suck. You have bitter, angry adults who should have gotten therapy a hell of a lot sooner in life that are ruining everything for kids. I'm so glad that I was a kid before all this wokeism ruined everything. Do you all know how hard it is to find a damn wooden spoon made here in the United States? I mean, I get it that we don't have like factories of whittlers or wood whittlers or whatever, but so I actually went on Etsy. And I was like, I want to know that this was carved by an American craftsman. I'm like, I don't care. And my oldest son was like, okay, you're not purchasing an heirloom that you're going to be passing on to me. It's not like I'm going to be like, and this was my mother's wooden spoon. Like, that's not the point. The point is that I don't want to give money to China. And he's like, but it's literally like a wooden spoon. It's like $2. If not even that. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. So I did. I bought my wooden utensils off Etsy. Literally hand whittled. No joke. And they were like, that's all. And it was just like this mom and pop shop. They're actually in Pennsylvania. Did you know that? Mom and pop shop. And because they were on Etsy, I'm pretty sure that they weren't goth AF, like with the Amish. Yeah, which is still so goth. So cool. But I was reading about, that's how they make their living. I'm like, oh my gosh, so hot. I love that. Like, so self-sufficient. I love it. That's awesome. That's one of the things actually that I've always been super, and I'm being really honest here, because I always think that the people who have a skill, who have a craft, who have like a trade skill, I've always been so jealous of those people.
And, you know, my husband's like, well, Dana, you know, being able to talk is incredibly important. And, you know, that's also a skill. Sam Adams, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I get it. I get it. But sometimes I really don't view it that way. Right. Like sometimes I think it's nuts that I'm like, I'm in the position I'm in because of my mouth. This is ridiculous. Like, as I talk, it's insane to me, for real. Like, there are people who like carve marble and, you know, I'm like, what in the world? It's just so weird to me because they have this tangible skill. And I've been fascinated by that. Fascinated. And the people who make it look easy, and then when you try to do it and it's a mess. Have you ever tried glass blowing? I am not wonderful at it. And was in this like really awesome workshop for this glass, and that's literally what they do. It's, and they trained like third generation, actually fourth generation, I think. And they do like, you know, light fixtures and all kinds of stuff, but they blow glass and they do ornaments and all this here in Texas. A couple years ago, it was in there. They make it look so easy. It's like a dance. And the way they do it, I was just mesmerized. Because then when they're like, would you like to try? And I'm like, yeah, maybe I've learned something. Nope, didn't learn a thing watching you. Clearly, it was a mess. But I know what my skill set is and what it isn't. But I've always been incredibly jealous of the people who have that tangible skill, that craftsmanship. I'm kind of getting off topic, but can I just tell you? So I found my new favorite social media account. It's like Architects Against the World or something like that. It's a bunch of architects who hate modernity. And literally their entire account is making fun of old neighborhoods where they have these beautifully crafted homes and the brick and the, and then they, somebody puts this like turret of a monstrosity modern thing right there. And it just, and I'm actually, so I'll make sure I'll, if you want, I can put this in prep if you feel like reading it, because I get off on these really weird tangents right now. And so I was reading about this and they were lamenting the craftsmanship, even from bricklaying, from masonry, whether even it's, you know, people who work with like actual pipe or steel, plumbing, anything that is a trade, anything where you actually have to have some kind of motor skill with your hands. And I was reading about all of this and they have like these photographic examples. And I'm like, oh my gosh, after I was reading this, I'm like, that is ugly. And then they were talking about the materials used. And so they had this whole sidebar where they were weighing the materials that actual craftsmen would use when they would build homes. And then today when someone wants to throw up a modern structure. And then they had all these examples of these modern structures that went up in the 70s that they already had to tear down because they just didn't last. Meanwhile, the stuff that was built with great simple materials has lasted the test of time and is still up. Yes, it's all about maintenance as well. But when you use materials that last, you actually can maintain them, you know? And I was reading this and it made so much sense. And they completely tore apart like the Netherlands, because apparently that's where it's like the worst. I don't know. I'll just share it with you. But I was thinking about all of this, and this all gets into that spirit of craftsman, homespun, everything. And taking it back, do we really need to buy something and have it route through, you know, Southeast Asia and come through Los Angeles? And I'm just like, if you can't find it here, do I need it? Really? For the things like medicines and that we, unfortunately, because of our politicians, we are forced to rely upon China for right now, I get it. Can we maybe, I don't know, can we like kickstart a place here to do it? I mean, I don't know. I'm just wondering. Can we? Like, have the dads build the wall? By the way, you know how many of you dads reached out and were like, I'll build it?
Right, I saw that.
Dude, I had people telling me like what drill bits and stuff they could. I'm not even joking you. I was dying laughing reading some of y'all's emails. I had tears in my eyes. I was crying. Oh, man. So, I have all these stories where it's like supply chain, supply chain, supply chain, but I'm telling you, it would be so much easier if we were a little bit more homespun. Don't you think so? But I did. I went that out of my way for a wooden spoon. I love that wooden spoon. I use that wooden spoon and I hate communists every time I stir. I'm like, this is how much I hate communists. And then when I would do like the oil and nut on it after it starts drying out and I maintain it, it's good as new. That's my I hate commies spoon. Really is. I'm very proud of that spoon. Like, I'll go, and then I'll talk about it like an old lady forever. Like, Kate, look at this. I got it. I went and I didn't get it from China. I do that to you. Dana here. Do you enjoy a glass of wine with dinner, maybe while in the backyard entertaining friends, unless you're in Australia? Well, let me tell you about one of my best kept secrets, the world's first extreme altitude wine club. My friends over at Bonner Private Wines are a group of Americans who got tired of those flimsy little icky wines that you find at a lot of supermarkets. You know, the kind. It's like a step above Boone's Farm. Cheap throat-burning reds, the syrupy yellow whites. Gag. They set out on a journey miles away from civilization and 9,000 feet in the sky to find some of the world's most remote wines. They almost died trying to bring you this liquid treasure. Pop up in one of these bottles and you're going to get blackberry, leather, smoke, and a little dark cherry. Plus, if you love steak and barbecue, you're an American, right? These wines make a great pairing. And today, you can be one of the first to try these extreme altitude wines. Visit conservativewines.com today and you'll get 50% off of your wine and 50% off of your shipping. No middleman. No inflated prices. Just visit conservativewines.com. That's conservativewines.com.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Y'all, do I have a Florida Man story for you right now? So apparently, Ron DeSantis, Florida man Ron DeSantis and the CEO of the Florida Ports Council, Michael Rubin, they've extended an invitation to languishing ships to travel southeast and fill their ports in Florida. They say Florida is not only ready but able to handle the offloading and distribution of goods across the country, according to YTVW. I mean, best dad, Ron DeSantis, right there, Florida man.
Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.